This is Houston Matters. I'm Craig Cohen. On this date 50 years ago, June 28, 1969, a series of spontaneous and sometimes violent demonstrations broke out in protest of a police raid at the Stonewall Inn, a gay bar in New York City. What became known as the Stonewall Riots eventually led to the modern LGBTQ rights movement and the creation of organizations like the Human Rights Campaign and the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, which would later become simply GLAAD. But 15 years before all of that, what would become one of the oldest active LGBTQ organizations in the country formed right here in Houston. To tell us about the history and legacy of the Dianas, we are joined now by Brandon Wolf, a journalist who wrote about the group for Outsmart magazine. Brandon, welcome to Houston Matters.
Thank you.
Glad to have you with us. As we chat, we welcome your questions and comments at 713-440-8870. We're on Twitter at Houston Matters. You can email us at talk@houstonmatters.org. All right, take us back. I guess we're talking about 1953 and then 1954. How did the Dianas come to be?
Well, nobody really intended to start the Dianas. It was something that I found so beautiful about it was that it resonated with people and it evolved. It actually started in 1953. That was the first year that the Oscars were ever broadcast on television. Nowadays, it's hard to even find a host for the show.
Right.
Back in 1953, it was a really big deal. So people all across the country were very excited about getting a chance to watch this. And there was a florist named David Moncrief, and he invited about 10 of his gay friends to his house to watch the first broadcast of the Oscars. He bought a brand new color TV for this, and unfortunately, the reception didn't work. So, but everybody came back the next year, and in 1954, just as a gag, before the Oscars were broadcast, they gave he gave a fake Houston Oscar to someone. As far as I know, it was a lesbian named Hub Langford, and it was for some kind of dubious behavior, like stealing somebody else's girlfriend or something.
goodness!
And after the show, people said, "Let's keep doing this each year." But they thought that was so much fun about the award. They said, "Let's do that again next year." Well, then the next year, they added a couple more to it. And then the next year, a couple more. And it got to be that this was really the thing that people in the social set in Houston's gay community wanted to come to.
This became a big, huge social event.
It did, not overnight. It slowly evolved. That was my fascination with it, too. And the thing of it was they were always competing with themselves. Every year they wanted to do it bigger and better than the year before.
And where did the name Diana come from?
The name Diana came from a statue that was in their living room at the first show. The man that lived there had a roommate who worked for Sackowitz department store, and he dressed the windows. And they had a plaster of Paris life-size Diana that they were going to throw away. And he decided to bring it home. Well, they decided that they needed, after a few years, to give a name to this. Because you had the Tonys, you had the Oscars, so they just picked Diana, since Diana was in the home of the man that had the first party.
How did this initial group of friends coming together for this annual Oscar party, essentially, how did it ultimately develop not just into something bigger, but something with maybe more of a social consciousness behind it, more intention behind it than simply the idea of a big party?
Again, you have to think of it just evolving year by year. By 1966, that was the last year that they had it in someone's house. And even then, it was difficult for them because they wanted to have the seating in rows like a theater, since this was about movies. And in 1967, they rented for an evening an adult theater over in University Shopping Center. It's gone now. And they did that for 2 years. And then they went to a dinner theater out in Town and Country. And that was 1969.
By 1976, though, this becomes the Diana Foundation, a nonprofit.
Right.
To do what?
The reason it became a foundation was that the members were beginning to support all the costs of it because, as I said, it continued to evolve. When they got into the theater, they actually had their very first drag show. There was an ice skater who used to ice skate with Sonya Henie, and he loved to go in drag. And so that year he had some friends coming through with the touring company of Hello Dolly, and he got to borrow the Hello Dolly outfit overnight. And he called it Hello Diana. But then that's when it began to have more of a theatrical feel to it. And finally, in 1975 or 76, they moved to the Hilton downtown, not the one you're thinking of. No, it's the Sheraton downtown. It's gone now.
I've got an email here from Mary who writes, I was active with the Diana Foundation in the late 70s and early 80s. Even though I'm cisgender, heterosexual female, I'm a local actress, appeared as the only straight lead in their award shows for several years. She went on to say that the Dianas always came to see any show in which I appeared. She also notes that now many of those friends are gone. The AIDS epidemic was the beginning of the end of that era, and simply the passing of the years took my friends from me. I miss them. I'll never forget their outrageousness and bravery.
She was fabulous.
Well, let me ask you about this: how this organization then really did change, as so many did, as the AIDS crisis took hold in the 1980s.
Up until that time, I think probably a few years before AIDS hit, they started taking money that they started charging a small admission, and the members just got all the sets together and costumes, et cetera. But the money that they made, they gave to generally people that were that they knew were gay, students like that were going to go into ballet or into some kind of performing art. When the AIDS crisis hit, they quickly turned that money around and gave it back to the community. And they started and seeded probably all of the major AIDS organizations that were to follow, like AIDS Foundation Houston, et cetera.
The Diana Foundation, the year since, has helped start an LGBT history research collection.
That's correct.
Why is it important to track and preserve such history?
That's a very... like any minority community, the history is very is very fragile. You know, it wasn't kept by a lot of people over the years, and so what we do have, we want to keep and preserve, and it's right down the street here in the MD Anderson Library, and it was the Dianas that initially came out here in 2013 and got that collection started.
What has the Diana Foundation done in the years between, you know, the height of the AIDS crisis and really up till today? What has it become?
They kind of call it their golden era was during the 80s, and they would have shows in the Tower Theater completely packed, 1,100 people coming there paying $150 a piece. They would have a cast of 150. They would have major musical numbers, and you think about something like that, they might have 20 people in a musical number, and they had to make all of the outfits. They didn't just go to a costume store and buy them. But your question was, what did they do? In 1987, unfortunately, the man that had really been the glue that held it all together was murdered in his townhouse in Montrose. And after that, the Dianas, even though they moved downtown to the Wortham Center, it just began to fall apart and almost closed down twice, but members kept it together. But they've given to so many different local charities, and right now the big ones that they give to are the history preservation and also for gay youth, homeless youth, because that homeless youth number for gay youth is still stands at about 40%. We just can't seem to get it lower.
What do you mean? Explain what that number is.
If you had a number of all of the homeless teenagers in America, 40% of those would be LGBTQ kids. People are still throwing their kids out of their house.
What ultimately do you see as the legacy of the Dianas?
To me, it was resilience. It was the fact that you have back in 1953 that we were not popular with society at all. I mean, people were fired from government jobs. They were thrown out of the military. They couldn't keep teaching jobs. A lot of times they couldn't keep jobs at all because there was such a stigma. But these people that fought against that oppression, at the same time, they had fun, which is probably the reason that this is actually the oldest gay organization in America. And it's right here in Houston. You would think it might have been San Francisco. It might have been New York. Nope. It's Houston has the oldest continually active gay organization, and that's the Dianas.
Brandon Wolf is a journalist who wrote about the Dianas and the Diana Foundation for Outsmart magazine. He's also written a book, and there's a online flipbook version of it outlining their history, which you can find at dianahistorybook.com. Brandon Wolf, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you.